les cris de mort qui sortent de nos cachots putrides. Que je chante l'eau claire des ruisseaux, des rivières, devant l'Artibonite, rouge du sang de nos frères. Tu te dis pacifique, tu te dis apolitique, mon frère. T'aimes bien les chanteurs de charme, ça plaît bien aux belles dames. Quand elles tombent dans les pommes, ça ne fait de mal à personne. Quand le chanteur se trémousse.
Mon frère, by Manon Charlemagne, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today marks 1.5 years since the devastating earthquake that ravaged Haiti, killing more than 316,000 people, leaving at least 1 million homeless. The country's slowly begun to build, but efforts have been slow in a country that was already one of the poorest in the Western Hemisphere before the earthquake hit. Critics have faulted the efforts of international donors, including the U.S., for failing to deliver on pledges while exerting excessive control over the reconstruction process. Former President Bill Clinton has played a major role in relief efforts, serving as the U.N. Special Envoy to Haiti and as co-chair of the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission. Through his Clinton Foundation, the former president has helped fund a number of projects in Haiti. Well, a new investigative report from The Nation magazine takes a critical look at the Clinton Foundation's first Recovery Commission project in post-earthquake Haiti, the construction of shelters in the city of Laogan. President Clinton first announced the project in a video on his foundation's website.
Many of you have expressed your interest in the progress being made in Haiti as the nation continues to recover from the earthquake. I wanted to give you just a quick update of some of our ongoing efforts to help the people build back better. The recent cholera outbreak served as a stark reminder of the urgency we face to address the strengthened reconstruction efforts in Haiti. After the outbreak, my foundation responded, allocating $1 million to the government so that we could move supplies down there in a hurry. In addition to the health outbreaks, the hurricane season remains a threat, especially to those still living in camps. My foundation has contributed $1 million there to the construction of emergency storm shelters in Laogan.
But according to a new expose in The Nation magazine, the shelters turned out to be a series of trailers beset with problems, including mold, shoddy construction, in one case, worrying levels of formaldehyde. The trailers are also built by the same company, Clayton Homes, that's currently being sued in the U.S. for providing formaldehyde-laced trailers to displaced residents after Hurricane Katrina. A student and teacher at a school housed in the trailers described the conditions there.
The class gets so hot, kids get headaches, and we go to the teacher for him to give us painkillers.
I believe that the Grand Foundation of Clinton, given that we're speaking of a school, Clinton would build latrines for us so that the children can go to the toilet safely, given that we're under the iron rule of cholera. It's not finished. It's not too late. We're waiting for a lot of things from Clinton, and Clinton can do good things for Haiti.
That video clip is courtesy of The Nation magazine and the Canadian Center for Investigative Reporting. Well, for more, we're joined by the journalists who broke the story, Isabel MacDonald and Isabeau Doucette. Their piece, The Shelters That Clinton Built, is in the July 11th issue of The Nation magazine, online at thenation.com. Isabel, talk more about what you found.
Clinton, this was one of the first projects of the commission, and there's been very little transparency and accountability despite all these buzzwords, you know, sustainable development, community consultation around this commission. It's kind of widely seen as very opaque and labyrinthian. So we thought we'd just pick one project and really investigate it. And since this was one of the first and it was one of the few that's actually completed, we thought, you know, perfect. And what we found was, I mean, not only are these hurricane-proof shelters, trailers, which cannot be hurricane-proof according to, you know, U.S. standards, but, you know, they were riddled with any number of problems. They're extremely hot. They're leaking. There's mold. You know, there's visibly already starting to rot, even though they're freshly installed. So we thought, given that Clinton himself was the one who coined this term, build back better, we're going to build back better Haiti. What does this mean for what's to come of the commission's projects?
Isabel McDonald, Clayton Holmes, can you explain where these trailers came from and the problems they've had after Hurricane Katrina?
Well, we've been requesting documentation of any bidding process from the Clinton Foundation, and we have not gotten documentation. We know that they were built by Clayton Holmes, which is currently being sued in the United States for exposing Hurricane Katrina survivors to injurious levels of formaldehyde, which the plaintiffs in this FEMA formaldehyde lawsuit claim came as a direct result of them residing in trailers that Clayton Holmes had sold to FEMA. The Clinton Foundation has not answered our questions about any due diligence that was done. We know that trailers are considered a liability in the United States. In the case of a hurricane, FEMA tells Americans to evacuate trailers. And so the real question is, how did Bill Clinton think that this would be acceptable in Haiti to provide these trailers as hurricane shelters, to buy them from a company facing this kind of lawsuit over formaldehyde? And what does it say about the reconstruction efforts in Haiti if the very first project approved by the commission that's supposed to ensure accountability and transparency in Haiti's rebuilding passes this kind of project? And Bill Clinton himself has his hands all over it. And he is the co-chair of this commission that is supposed to ensure that Haiti is built back better.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we'll link to The Nation and your investigation. Isabel McDonald, Isabeau Doucette, thank you very much. The piece is called The Trailers That Clinton Built. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And the very good intro by the program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, the first of a series of special programs highlighting these United States of ours, actually through my eyes, because recently I took a cross-country trip for a number of reasons to help a friend out and bring his car from New York to Arizona, where he had moved and left his car behind. And also to continue onwards to the first Starbucks that we decided I would go to last year on this very program over in Newport Beach, California. It's going to take a while to get there, obviously, because it's all the way on the other side of the country. And there were a number of interesting things that were witnessed and experienced on the way over there. And I did my best, did my darndest to capture it all on audio, along with all kinds of other interesting things, observations, incidents that took place along the way. So we'll be focusing on that for this week, next couple of weeks, doing some other things as well. But basically, this happened last month, starting out here in Stony Brook and winding up over on the West Coast. So that's where we're going to pick up the action, at the very beginning of the trip, as I drive a car with temporary license plates from here to there. And you're welcome to write to us with your opinions, thoughts, comments, suggestions, things like that. otw@2600.com. Enjoy. Well, the trip has started. Well, it's just after midnight on a Sunday night, and I figure that's a good time as any to kick off. But I got to tell you, not 10 minutes into the trip, and I got pulled over because I guess I looked suspicious traveling around with no license plates. And I don't need no license plates to look suspicious, but no, I have no license plates, but I have the temporary license plate, which you stick in the back window, and that's what happens when you transport a car that's been sitting in New York for over a year to Arizona. It's got an Arizona paper plate, not a paper plate, obviously, but a paper piece of rectangular paper in the back windshield, and that's supposed to be a license plate. You know, I'm as intrigued by the whole thing as anybody, and I'm not really surprised that I got pulled over so quickly, because it's something I could Xerox back home very easily, or just write. It's handwritten. It's, well, I mean, the expiration date's handwritten. The numbers are printed, but it just looks really sketchy. And I've got to travel all the way across the country like this. I don't know. I'm not sure how many times I'm going to get pulled over, but it'll be interesting. It's good, though, when you know that there's absolutely nothing you're doing wrong, that everything is there, and you sort of, you know, have a smile on your face and say, wow, I can't believe I got pulled over so quickly. And you say that you're driving all the way to Arizona this way, and they sort of look at you and say, wow, are you going to have... Whoa. All right, I'm sorry. This is the first time I've ever cursed on the air, but this is stupid. This is the most stupid thing I've ever seen. I'm in Stony Brook, all right? Stony Brook is the very beginning of this trip, and I'm on Route 25A, a main road, coming around the corner, and there are these trucks just blocking the road. They're doing cleaning of the road, but they're around the corner, and there's absolutely no warning. You could go right into them, and there's nobody directing traffic. So I have to go around a blind corner, which I've just now successfully done, and hope that no cars are coming. I mean, good Lord, what the hell? That's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen anyone do. Of course, if I see any cars, I'll have to warn them by flashing my lights. Okay, so anyway, where was I? Yeah, this is going to be one hell of a trip. Already I've almost died and I've been pulled over, and I've been traveling 15 minutes. Oh yeah, and also my ATM card is not working at all. And I understand why it's not working. The magnetic strip is just about completely worn off. For some reason, the ATM card that I got at this bank, as long as I can remember, going back at least 20 years, this has always happened to it. The magnetic strip has always worn off. Yeah, hang on, I gotta warn this guy. Yeah, so the magnetic strip wears off. very easily, and so it's not being seen by my bank. So I've got about $8 on me to make it cross country in cash. I've got credit cards too, and I also, I don't know if you can hear this noise. Yeah, that's the sound of mate, Club Mate. I'm actually bringing that to selected people cross country. I have about, what, 5-6 cases of it here, so that'll be good for some quick cash, I guess. Well, they're on the way, you know, why not? I've got a car here, I've got cases of Club Mate to go out, so why not just make some people happy and bring it to them? It's just one of the many things that I do to make life more enjoyable. Anyway, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here because I am driving, and I'm also texting at the same time, and I am also trying to balance my checkbook all the while doing a crossword puzzle in the New York Times and listening to some really good music in my headphones. Ah, yes. Oh, and the other phone is ringing, so I got to go. But I'll be in touch. I'll keep updated. Maybe I'll just come on every time I get pulled over. How about that? Oh, that'll fill an hour pretty quickly. All right. We'll see where I check in from next. Well, I guess this is a good time to check in. Good Lord, it's about 18 hours later since, is that right? Yeah, it's about 6 o'clock now. And, when I was in Stony Brook, it was about midnight, but 6 o'clock in the evening. So I've been driving pretty much straight through for 18, I mean, I stopped a couple of times, but not for anything major, just to grab a bite to eat maybe, or walk around a little bit, but pretty much I've been going nonstop, not really in a hurry. I got lost a couple of times. I actually got really lost in New Jersey because I was trying to avoid the turnpike so I didn't have to pay a toll, because I didn't have enough money to pay the toll because I couldn't find my bank, and my ATM card wasn't working even when I did find the bank, so I had to figure all kinds of other things out. I finally got money, but it was a bit of a hassle at first, but I was able to find my way out of New Jersey, visited the Amish part of Pennsylvania for the first time, and that was pretty cool, seeing people with their horse and buggies just sort of hanging out pretty early in the morning, kids going to school, that kind of thing. Disturbing, though, because I don't know how they survive. They're going down these highways where everybody is going really, really fast or driving aggressively. And here they are with a horse and buggy and a bunch of kids in the back. It just seems really dangerous. And I don't know. I hope they have quieter streets to drive down. But it was nice seeing that part of the world, part of the country. It's always kind of neat to see different cultures. Now, right now, I'm approaching Indianapolis. So, yeah, I've driven straight through Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, and now I'm in Indiana. You know, I'm just going to keep going until it gets dark. And here's the thing that's kind of disquieting. I don't know what time it is. Now, you might say, oh, Emmanuel, just look at your damn phone and see what time it is. Yeah, okay, that's great. Wise guy, I can do that. But I'm in Indiana, and Indiana is a very confusing state as far as daylight savings time goes. Part of the state observes it, part of the state doesn't observe it, and I don't know which part I'm in. So I look at my phone, and I don't know if my phone has changed time on its own or if it's on the old time. I don't know what time it is. I don't know if I'm in Eastern time or Central time. I mean, I know what time it is. I don't know what time zone I'm in. How do you find that out? There's, like, really no easy way to do this. I mean, I could turn on the radio, but I have a kind of a crappy radio. It only gets local stations, so that's really not going to help. It's going to be about as helpful as looking at a clock. I know what the local time is. I just don't know if I am in Eastern or Central time, and I guess I'd have to keep going to Illinois, where I know it's Central time, to figure that out. It's kind of silly, though. I mean, all this technology, there's no way to actually tell what time zone it really is. I mean, everything just automatically changes. I have the same trouble when daylight savings time starts. Everything automatically switches. So I don't even know that it's happened sometimes. All I know is I feel extra tired the next day, and I don't know why. Regardless. I just saw something really kind of disturbing.
I was driving down I-70, heading west. This only happened about 10 minutes ago. And I passed by this this truck, this pickup truck, I guess, that had a trailer attached to it. It was one of those horse trailers. And it seemed like it was rocking when I passed it. And when I looked in my rearview mirror, I saw that there was a horse on the side, on the grass, next to the highway. And unfortunately, he wasn't just standing there. He was running. And I thought, that's unusual. And then I saw, to my horror, that he made a turn into what appeared to be the road. I couldn't actually see him go into the road because there were vehicles behind me, but I saw him through my mirror on the grass, and he seemed to go directly into the highway. And then in my side view mirror, the driver's side, I could see an 18-wheeler in the left lane. And the last thing I saw was that 18-wheeler just moving perpendicular. In other words, making a 90-degree turn extremely quickly. And I don't know what happened at that point, because I was going 70 miles an hour in the wrong direction. Well, in the right direction, really, because I really didn't want to be part of that or even see what happened. So I don't know if the horse got hit, if the horse survived, if the truck flipped. I don't know. I guess I'll just have to see if this gets reported anywhere. But boy, that was something that's... I mean, I saw it from a distance, but I knew what I was seeing. And well, I'm lucky sometimes. Well, once I saw a truck on the Northern State Parkway that shouldn't have been there, and it was right in back of me, and I knew it was going to hit a bridge because it was too high for the bridge, and sure enough, it did. And that was something. Had I been in back of that truck, it would have been a big inconvenience. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty much been my day so far. It really has been a day, hasn't it? I mean, keep in mind, I've put about 1,000 miles on this car since I started, and I started after being up all day. I started at midnight, but that's how I wanted to do it, and I knew I'd avoid traffic this way and get to where I want to be, but I think I will stop soon and sleep for a while and pick up again tomorrow and see how far I get. Never actually done it like this before. I've driven from Illinois to New York pretty much nonstop, but more a northerly route. This is more of a central route. I went through Ohio, went through Dayton, even went to where the Dayton Hamvention takes place. Of course, it's not taking place now, but it's just a big empty parking lot, which was very unusual to see that. I've never been there when nobody else was there. So that was kind of cool to see that. But yeah, it's pretty much been just a straight shot, trying to keep awake, listening to whatever radio I can get, playing music, stuff like that. Pretty peaceful, as long as I don't see horses getting hit by trucks or almost crashing into street sweepers back home, or almost seeing Amish people get run down, various things like that. And you know what? I think I might have just missed the turn on my... Oh, damn, did I... I think I just exited the highway by accident. I hate when they do that, when half the highway goes one way and half goes the other, and the half that goes the way you went isn't the highway anymore. It's something else. All right, I have to figure this out and turn around somehow and get back on the highway. It's not a good idea to do radio while you drive, especially after driving for 18 hours. More updates later. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of fun stories. Eureka! Actually, I say that only because I just entered the city of Eureka, Missouri. I wasn't planning on that. I just happened to see it as it went by. Here I am. I'm in Missouri now, heading west. I slept for, I think, 13 hours back in Illinois. I earned that, I think, after making it all the way out there in one shot. And then drove down the highway, delivered some Club Mate, and now I'm heading to points west. interesting listening to the radio in Illinois. I mean, I love listening to the radio. That's pretty much what it's all about, is listening to the radio when you travel. And that's why I was very upset when I found out the car didn't have a radio. But I brought my my boombox and hooked that up, and I'm able to listen. It's a little bit clumsy, but it does work for the most part. It doesn't work really well. I can only get stations that are local, meaning if you're 10 miles away from the transmitter, you're probably not going to get anything. But, you know, that's okay. Sometimes I can hold on to a station for a while. I'll tell you, it's really, it's cool listening to NPR. Usually I'm a big critic of NPR, only because they tend to take over every frequency known to man. But when you're out here, and really the only options are country music. I can like country music sometimes, but not like this. It's too much. Or soft rock. I mean, come on, slip my wrist before I listen to any more of that crap. Really bad, bland music of any sort, whether it be rap music, rock music. Any kind of music can suck, and they seem to have really found the niche out here for music that sucks, no matter what kind. And then, of course, there's religion, and I think that's the one that really gets me the most, is listening to religious radio, or just coming upon it and not listening for very long. I mean, guys, really, you know, you've gotten enough people to be all religious. Why do you need to ram it down their throats 24 hours a day? I mean, is it really that tenuous? If unless you're constantly hitting people with the propaganda, they're going to forget, or they're going to go to the devil or something? What are you afraid of? It's really overkill. Let people do something else with a few minutes of their time. I mean, I'm annoyed by this because I keep getting sucked into it. I was listening to what I thought was a decent bunch of indie rock back in Illinois. I wasn't listening to the lyrics, okay? Sue me. I wasn't listening to the damn lyrics. If I had been, then I guess I would have known it was actually religious music. And plus, you know, the lyrics weren't that clear to start with. You know, I'm listening to, sometimes it's metal music, and you think you're listening to real music, and it's a message about Jesus and the Lord and saviors and things like that. Why do you need to fool people like this? You know, it's not why rock and roll was invented. I mean, it makes you wonder what else they can manage to sneak it into. I haven't heard much Jesus jazz. I guess you could probably do it there somehow. there's all sorts of ways you can sneak the message in, but man, and then okay, when you find something that's not religion or crappy music or infomercials, I got a lot of those. You know, NPR is something that, yeah, great. I'm glad it's there. I'm able to listen to something and it's actually relevant. Not slanted one way or another. It's just educational. I think that's pretty cool. I heard some actual local NPR stuff. In other words, they would do national talk shows and they do local talk shows. They were interviewing a bunch of kids that were like starring in West Side Story for the local high school. That was really good. That's the kind of thing community radio should be all about, mixing the national with the local. Too bad not enough NPR stations do that. They usually just play satellite music for a good part of the time. But if they did local stuff, more often than I would not be criticizing them nearly as much. But I could see why people feel it's a threat, because it's not bland like everything else. It's actually making you think. And yeah, it has to be stopped. But moving on to like regular talk radio, and if you can pick up an AM signal, then you'll hear talk radio. But boy, that's something that really, I mean, it keeps you awake. It keeps you thinking and things like that, but for a totally different reason, because wow, you're so angry listening to this. I mean, just hearing the views and how dissent is not tolerated in any sense, and I say that because whenever you do get somebody who calls one of these shows and has a differing opinion, they're mocked and ridiculed, and it's really kind of sad. I mean, one of the slogans I heard on one of the religious stations was "Believe and obey." Literally, that's what they were telling people. Believe and obey. And that's how you're supposed to live your life. Well, the right-wing talk radio doesn't quite say that, but they might as well, because you pretty much have to believe what they're saying, and you damn well better obey them. And some of the things they were saying was basically how we live in a socialist regime now, and nothing new that you probably ever haven't already heard. But driving through St. Louis, I was listening to, I think it was KMOX, and they were talking about their mass transit, their burgeoning mass transit system, which allows people to get from point A to point B, and how they really need to dismantle this mass transit system and put the money into highways. And literally, they see mass transit as a sign of socialism. They see it as a bad thing, something that really should be stopped, because why do you want people to be able to get somewhere without driving? And how we need more highways, and how we need wider highways, how basically a neighborhood was upset because there was a limit of 4 lanes in each direction for the highway that went through their town. I honestly wonder, am I on planet Earth still? Are these human beings? How can you say things are bad when they obviously aren't bad, or things are good when they obviously aren't good? I mean, this is not a good thing. People were boasting about how little gas mileage they get on their cars. I'm not kidding. One of the radio hosts was saying how, yeah, I have a V8 engine in my SUV, and it only gets about 10 miles a gallon. I'm proud of that. That's my right as an American. I mean, yeah, it's funny, but people believe this crap, and people elect people based on this crap, and policies are enacted based on this crap, and we basically are moving backwards based on this crap. It stops being funny at that stage, and you have to stop looking at the freaks and start realizing, hey, the freaks are running the asylum, and can't have that. You got to do something different. No offense to any freaks, but the good kind of freaks. Anyway, another thing, driving down highways in Illinois, there are some crackpots there, too. I forget what the website is. I think it was gunssavelives.com. It's either gunssavelives.com or gunssavelife.com. Not sure. If it's the latter, then they really don't know grammar very well, or they didn't register the site in time. I'm not sure which. But some crackpot is going around putting up, you know, those little billboards that have lots of messages, basically. You have to follow the story as you're driving. And basically they tell you a story about how guns are great. They talk about thugs coming to your house and how they wind up not stealing money as soon as they hear the gun. And each one of the sentences is basically another sign. And it ends with, guns are safe and fun. Guns are safe and fun. Yeah, that's the message you really want to send to kids and people. I think that's the problem. People believe that guns are toys and that they're fun and safe. They're not safe. They're not fun. They're a tool, and they're really dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. And, you know, if you interpret that statement as anti-gun, then wow, you really have a low tolerance for anything that could be seen as guidance. Because you need to act like an adult around something dangerous like that. You can't have it both ways. You can't say a gun is used to save your life, but it's fun and anybody can do it. No, it's not fun. It's something that you need training in, and you damn well better know what you're doing when you use one. But anyway, the point is, the state is filled with these signs of this one-issue organization basically telling you that guns are safe, guns are fun, and if you don't get a gun, horrible things will happen to you. It basically puts fear into people's minds and makes you think in what I think is a negative way. And I guess accounts for a lot of the policies, a lot of the radio that you hear. And you just got to question everything you hear, including that. I just don't see people doing that nearly enough. And unfortunately, in this part of the world, there's not much in the way of alternatives. I mean, yeah, there are alternatives. You have to hunt for them. They exist. And all the more credit for people that come from places like this and are thinking for themselves and doing things not necessarily the way the mainstream feels they should. And that's always a good thing, no matter what the view is, when people think for themselves. Anyway, with all that in mind, as I do 85 miles an hour down the interstate and I'm being passed by people, I haven't been stopped again, which I guess is good. I got stopped within 10 minutes of starting back in Stony Brook, but and because I had a temporary license plate taped to the back window and no license plates at all on the car, because I'm transporting a car that basically was parked in New York City and is now being moved to Arizona and doesn't have any registration, any normal registration. So you get 30-day temporary plates, and you can do what you want. But I was expecting to get stopped a lot more than this. Well, we still have the country to go through. Right now, I'm actually racing across the state of Missouri to see the city of Joplin. And if you might have heard, Joplin was victimized by a horrible tornado earlier in the year. Something like 200 people killed as a result. And, I admit it, I'm curious the devastation over there. So, since it was kind of on the way, wanted to just have a sense as to what can happen in a moment's notice, or maybe even no notice. I got to say, I'm a little worried about this region, because they do have tornadoes, and I've never seen one. I've seen some bad weather. I'm not sure I'd know what to do or would even recognize the warning signs. But hopefully I'll learn something. Well, when I turned on the TV this morning in Illinois, they had flash flood warnings for two counties, but they didn't tell anybody where the counties were. And this is something to keep in mind if you're running a TV station and you're warning people about potentially dangerous weather conditions. Not everybody is from the local area, so they might not know where it is that you're referring to. So maybe a map, maybe some pointers and other ways to get people to be safe. And hopefully if there are tornadoes coming, there'll be some kind of warning system that travelers like me will be aware of. There's that. The thing is, I'm not sure I'm going to make it by dusk, because it took a while. There was traffic in St. Louis. So I think I'll get there maybe just as things get dark. Not that I really want to sightsee and see a whole lot of flattened ground and things like that, but I do want to sort of get the impression of nature's fury, which is something that I think we all need to see, all need to feel, and just take seriously, because I think too many times we think that we can control everything, and you really can't control anything in the end. Nature has the final say, and nature certainly did in Joplin. Anyway, so we'll see where that goes. My goal is to make it to Arkansas tonight. Arkansas is one of two states that I have never been to, the other one being Hawaii. I'm not going to make it to Hawaii this trip, but Arkansas is definitely on the way, and it'll be cool to scratch that off the list. All right, back to driving.
Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, an actor out on loan, riders on the storm.
Well, then you should be looking at President Obama.
What that looks like, what...
Just arrived in Joplin, Missouri. Actually, I didn't know what to expect when I got here. I just kind of drove as fast as I could so I could get here by sunset. I made it. Sun's still up. It's just about to set. I just drove down a road. Looked normal at first. And all of a sudden it just it changed rather slowly, but then very dramatically. I'm right now. I'm in some kind of a shopping center. I don't know what it used to be. Some kind of outdoor shop. ADER outdoor is all I can read. The rest of the very big store is completely gone, destroyed. Across the street, a whole strip mall looks like a bomb hit it. Throughout, it reminds me of the way dwarf pines look, if you go out east on Long Island, very short trees, and that's all that's left of trees here. I mean, let me just stand outside. This is unlike anything I've ever seen. Cars crumpled, and this happened a couple of weeks ago. Actually, maybe as many as 3 weeks ago, and still it's incredible. All kinds of portable signs that have been erected for people to get forms in for right of entry, I imagine, to get into their homes, to get whatever they can. Emergency trucks of all sorts parked on the side of the road. It's so weird, though, because where I am right now, everything looks perfectly normal. Absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. Where I just was, it was like a lunar landscape, save for the bits of retail and branches of trees. And throughout it, there's this strange odor in the air, kind of dusty, pungent smell of something. Hard to really put a label on it. It's also rather hot, a very hot breeze, which just might be typical weather for this part of the country, but it being just dusk, it just felt a little odd. And we're also under tornado watch, which sure doesn't add to the feeling here. Or maybe it does. Yeah, I think I'm moving more towards the center of town, which kind of disturbs me because what I saw just now apparently was not the worst of it. And that would make sense because thousands of homes were destroyed. Something really incredible about this whole story is that supposedly throughout one part of town, there are all these black and white pictures that have been strewn about an entire part of town. And this was
outside the home of Merwin Mosler, who was a photographer back in the mid-1900s, mid-20th century. And that was Main Street I just passed. Okay. Merwin Mosler was a photographer of note, and the home where he used to live had a lot of his pictures and negatives, and his daughter had kept them in the home after he had died, and his home was destroyed in the tornado, and the pictures, which serve as a testament of what Joplin was all about, they're everywhere. I don't know if they're everywhere now, but immediately afterwards they certainly were. I'm going to go right through the center of town, and I imagine I'll see the change pretty quickly. Of course, everywhere you look, there's flags at half-mast. And today's Flag Day, too, so, oh boy, there's a lot of flags. I'm on the corner of South Main and 7th Street now. And so far, other than a little bit of construction, things look fairly normal. The sun is just about going down now, and the sky is kind of purple, which I don't really know how I feel about that. Streets are empty of people. There's cars, but not very many people around. To see a lot of closed stores here, but they don't really look damaged. A lot of discount places, pawn shops, things like that. I'd almost say it's a typical looking Midwestern town. Crossing the train tracks now. It's really hard to describe because I'm not really seeing anything unusual, but there's a feeling. There's just some kind of, I guess, foreboding, and also just I guess it's a kind of sadness. See occasional police cars that seem to be driving around. A couple of people walking down the street. Not sure to what, though, because things don't seem to be open here. Actually, it's a used furniture store. It looks like it was open. I guess they would definitely have a lot of potential customers. Okay, now I'm starting to see small piles of rubble on the sides of the street. Very small, nothing big. Okay, now some signs that are missing from the stores. Norma's Kitchen, for instance, had an overhead sign, and there's nothing but an empty frame now. So I guess this is where it begins. There's something very, very strange about the trees. They're big and tall, but they look traumatized. Oh my god. Oh my god. Alright. This is really kind of crazy. Right next to a place called Snack Attack, which is basically a gas station and a convenience store. Across the street, there are a bunch of people sitting outside at tables. It's a Walgreens, and Walgreens doesn't normally have tables, so either they're emergency workers or they're people with no place else to go. It literally, literally just begins. Basically, you have stores, you have things that are open, people walking in and out of places, and then there's nothing. Just what looks like just flattened ground ahead, with some tree branches and poles sticking up, and it's like the city just ends. Of course, the city didn't end before. But what I was saying about the trees, it's very bizarre because they're big and tall, and there's just something wrong with them. Their leaves aren't right. It looks like they've been traumatized in some way. And I feel absolutely awful taking pictures here. Not that there's anyone around, I don't think. I hear the sounds of... God, this is like walking into a tomb. I hear the sounds of buildings groaning as I pass by. Strange noises. But, I mean, I do feel awful taking pictures of such devastation, but it's also just as bizarre, I would imagine, to drive through here as if nothing is happening. I see so many people driving and just continuing to drive and... not sure what they're thinking. It's definitely the term eerie calm comes to mind. Just nothing. Just some occasional frames of houses, a crane or two, wrecked cars, foundations. And, I've heard from some accounts that it's really hard to find things anymore because the way we find things generally is by landmarks. You look for a building or a tree or something, and when they're all gone, you honestly don't know where you are in your own city if you go down the street. Can't even imagine. I just passed by one house, and for a moment, I thought to myself that they had the lights on inside, or the electricity was working, but it was the roof not being there anymore, and the remnants of the day were shining in. Nobody's here, and many of these houses have paint on them, orange paint, I guess, indicating there are bodies inside. I see a zero. I guess that means there's no bodies found in there. I do see a lot of zeros. It simply is incredible that so many more people didn't lose their lives. Alright, now this is also weird. I just crossed over a street, and there's a lot of damage here, but it's mostly property damage to trees and grass and things like that. The structures are still up. It's literally one block over. There's lights on in these houses. Some damage, people sitting on their porches. But there are houses, at least. Occasional roof damage, but that's it. There are houses. I just passed a place called Orient Express. Looked like it was fine, Chinese restaurant, but it wasn't open. But as I look down, I see that darkness, and I see that there's quite a bit of damage around. Houses are still up, though, but... oh, wow, yeah, oh my God. There is a tremendous amount of flattened buildings. Yeah, this is bad. I hear generators. And I mean, it looks like I'm passing a field of some sort, but this isn't a field, or it wasn't a field. It just seems to go on for miles. I mean, the devastation is... it's devastation either way, but there is so much more of it going in this direction. It just... I don't see an end. It's just nothing but wreckage. A State Farm trailer. Occasional cars inside these, what used to be developments. I'm doing about 20 miles an hour. I feel like I'm holding up the person behind me, but I realize they could pass me at any time. They're doing the same thing I'm doing, basically. Well, not doing a radio show, but looking at what's around them and just sort of stunned by the whole thing. Now I can see that I'm seeing more structures. There's still complete devastation. The houses are a total loss. God Bless Joplin is painted on the side of one of the houses. Well, now I understand why somebody painted Kentucky on the ground a few streets back. I saw a street sign that said Alabama. Apparently we're in one of those developments that's named after states. So that was how they were marking the street, since the street sign had been destroyed. There's a traffic light up ahead. I can basically guess that things return to somewhat normal at that point. Just realized I think we have a full moon tonight. That's... definitely going to cast this area in a very eerie light. Just saw my first power truck, and I realize, coming from Long Island where we have lots of power issues with storms, especially hurricanes, you always see the power trucks everywhere. Why so few, or none actually? And I realize that there's nothing to restore power to. Houses are destroyed. They don't need power. And I imagine the houses that are still standing probably had power restored very quickly, or within the first couple of weeks. Right now, heading back through the wasteland here. So I'm going to look at my odometer and see just how much space this actually takes up. I'm on 20th Street. It literally takes a few seconds for this to happen. And the warning that you get is so little warning. And you have to know what to do. And I think the fact that so few people lost their lives indicates they really did know what to do here. And somehow they're pulling through this. Just this could happen to anyone in one form or another. So far it's been a mile. Of course, that's only just cutting through one side. I'm not sure how far down it goes in other directions. There's only so much of this you can take, you know. It's and now that it's getting dark, you really have the sense of the eeriness where a thriving neighborhood once was only a couple of weeks ago. Now there's just silence and debris. Alright, then I'm out of it. So I'd say that was about a mile and a half straight down one road, complete devastation. And there's still quite a bit of destruction around me. There's nothing like in back of me, though. So we painted on the side of one of these buildings in orange, K9X. I don't know what that means. Has something to do with a dog or nine people, or I have no idea. Oh, this is really bizarre. I'm looking at ghostland, wasteland of destroyed houses, and throughout you see an occasional blink of a firefly. I didn't know they got fireflies out here, but they really stand out. They're the only light that's visible. And I'm inside a shopping center, which looks like it's brand new, completely untouched, well lit and everything. Of course, there's nobody here.
just turned down a side street to make a U-turn and go back the other way, and I'm actually going through a neighborhood that people are living in, but even this has been touched pretty severely. You see trees down everywhere, and I hear fireworks. People are actually lighting fireworks. Wow. So normally this would be a big deal, having trees come down, but at least the houses are standing. Yeah, these are the people that were quite lucky. It's incredible. I'm in a section not two or three blocks away. It's untouched. The road is nice and smooth. The buildings are pristine, well lit. Just not very many people. They probably have lots of other things to worry about. It's interesting. 32nd Street seems to be one of the boundaries. And, if the storm had an identity, I guess you could say it had it out for Jasper County, because as soon as you cross 32nd Street, the sign says entering Jasper County, and that's where devastation seems to begin. A sincere thank you to all volunteers, first responders, medical personnel, utility workers, and to the city of Joplin. Let's rebuild. That gives a time, a phone number, and the temperature. The name Greg Crawford, and I'm not quite sure what that's all about. Another phone number. Maybe that's a business or something. Maybe it's his sign. I don't think I can take much more of this. Want to get back onto something else. Cannot imagine what it must be like to live here and to have to figure out a way to get through this. I've only been here a little while and I feel like my head's going to explode. I guess, am I glad I did this, came here? Well, not glad, that's definitely not the right word, but it's something that you need to see. If something like this happens and you're in a position where you can just kind of pass through it, I guess, it's an education. And of course, if you can do anything to help, that's really what is most needed. I think I'll just remember how tenuous it all is, how easily things can change just from one moment to the next, on what a massive scale.
Walking down the Jericho Road, tears in her eyes. eyes and her head hung low, and she's walking down the Jericho Road. I met my father walking down the Jericho Road, his back bent over from a heavy load, and he's walking down the Jericho Road. I said, Papa, don't you know me? Won't you lay your burden down? And he shook his head and told my son, you better turn around. And he kept on walking, walking down the Jericho Road.
This week's Off the Wall came from Joplin, Missouri, among other places. Next week we'll be in Arkansas, Texas, and along the Mexican border as the cross-country voyage continues. Write to us, otw@2600.com, with any of your thoughts, feelings, suggestions, whatnot. It's Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
I met my brother walking down the Jericho Road, and his hands were bloody, but his face was clean. He's walking down the Jericho Road. I met my sister walking down the Jericho Road with a baby in her arms that I'd never seen, and she was walking down the Jericho Road. She says, just a little off and try to find along the way. I'll raise him as my own and he'll forgive us all someday. And she kept on walking, walking down the Jericho Road. I met my mother. I met my father. I met my brother. I met my sister.
The Sargasso Sea is home to a tiny fighter with a nose for finding its next meal. The sargassum fish hunts prey with its very own fishing pole attached to its snout, as we'll learn today on Our Ocean World. The Sargasso Sea is one name for the western North Atlantic. Here, thick rafts of sargassum seaweed float on the water's surface. But looks can be deceiving. The fronds of sargassum hide their namesake, the sargassum fish. The sargassum fish's mottled brown color and ragged appendages make it hard to distinguish fish from plant. When you're just inches long, seaweed makes a good refuge from predators. But sargassum fish do not spend their lives hiding. They're small but fierce fighters, and by their rules of combat, the losing rival becomes lunch. Sargassum fish are competitive by nature, but occasionally they have to be more stealthy than spry to find their next meal. Luckily, they're specially equipped. Sargassum fish have a rod-like snout with a fleshy tip that looks like bait. To lure in a tasty vittle, they dangle their bait, and the motion piques the curiosity of their prey. The sargassum fish just follows its nose to the next meal. I'm Marilyn Cooley. Our Ocean World, produced with the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative, working to protect the life of the ocean so the ocean can help sustain the life of our planet.
Hey kids, Finn with you, Finn's Revolution. Until 9 p.m. tonight, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight's special guest, Marshall Curry, director of the film If a Tree Falls. Great film about envioterrorism. That's really, really cool. And best of all, Kira from Dose and Black Flag will be with us tonight. Stay tuned.
Tell me, but all my wisdom he parted.